you feel like it's time to begin a new period of productivity, growth, and success in your life? It happens.
It happens.
And we just need the right motivation and the right teacher. Welcome to the Bees Presents Epic Visionary. No matter where you are in life, if you've made it or on the way up the ladder, this is for you. We're here to enlighten, discuss, inform, and question established points of view so that we can begin a period of new discovery and achieve those life-altering, amazing results. This is the Bees Presents Epic Visionary.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to a new episode of the Bees Presents Epic Visionary. And as usual, we will be respectful of your time because we know that time is the new currency. And as always, I am Charles the Bees Beasley, and everyone in the world has heard of me. You, the audience, have heard of me, but those that are yet to come will hear of me because everyone in the world has heard the story about the birds and who? The bees, and that was me. Now, what we hope to do at this particular point is to have a conversation where we can drop some information. But remember, before you can connect the dots, you must first collect the dots. So hopefully we leave some information that you are willing to collect, and maybe you can put it back together at some particular point in time just to help you make another step forward in your journey, in your life, or whatever it may be to you. And today's conversation is, does your sacrifice affect your worth? Does your sacrifice affect your worth? And the young man that's going to help us on this journey today is Mr. Eric Elliott. He is the CEO of VIP Marketing, the founder of Craft Creative, and the founder of 10 Mile Studios, which is in North Charleston. And he's also the creator of the Adcast, which is the podcast for marketers and advertisers. So let's give a big welcome to Mr. Eric Elliott. Thank you for coming on the show, Eric.
Thank you. Thank you, Bees, man. I'm excited to be with you, man. I've been listening for a good while, man, and I love what you do. I love what you do.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. I am as excited to have you on. We always chit-chat a little bit, and I've been waiting on this moment for a long time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to set the atmosphere. We've heard a little bit about his companies. We will dig into that a little bit deeper here. Yet, what I would like to do at this particular point in time is talk about the man just a little bit, okay? So, Eric is a superhero. He's a man that loves teaching and using metaphors, okay? But this is not a metaphor. Eric is the living embodiment of the rules of being a superhero. Okay. Eric has a backstory and of growth behind that. Okay. He has a backstory, and there's growth behind tragedy. And this is very, very interesting. I think this may be what fuels him, but he'll tell us that a little bit more. Through trial and tribulations, he's an entrepreneur. He's a philanthropist, dedicated father and husband, and he's a friend to many. So now, two of Eric's superpowers, he's got many, but we just going to brush on these two right now, okay? He has an immense heart, and he gives back, and you can feel it in him when you talk to him, and if you ever meet him, you can see it in his smile. It's pretty awesome, okay? Number two is he has uncanny brain power, hence he has those companies, right? So once we get into talking to him, you're going to see what that means, and I'm pretty excited about that. Now, there's something that I really did not know that's kind of surprising to me, shocking, but nonetheless, it may be shocking to others. But Eric is a sneakerhead, right? He's a sneakerhead. I never would have thought that. But from what my spies tell me, he has a closet full of shoes. It just didn't say sneakers, but shoes in general. Now, he's, I don't know, but he has an affinity toward Air Jordans is what they tell me now. So I don't know, like me back as a kid, you know, you used to go put on the shoes, you go jump high and run high. I think that might be why he puts on them Jordans, because he think he could dunk. I don't know. But this is what I did find out, and which is a very good reason. He wears sneakers because it reminds him of where he comes from and where he's going to be, right? So as he kind of looks at, he wears those sneakers to remind him where he came from, and it makes him thankful for where he is today. And that was, I thought that was very, very awesome and profound to me. So Eric is already planning for next year and beyond. The coolest thing about that is that he's able to see things as they are. But on top of that, what he does is he's able to see things as they could be. That is a true visionary. So as a visionary, you see things as they are, but you have the vision to see things as they could be. And that's part of his story. His mind is always geared toward growth and moving forward, and his dreams are limitless. So that's a visionary in itself. Because of this, his businesses are thriving. I didn't say they were just kind of moving along, but they're thriving. His family is loved and growing, and his network is nothing less than inspired by his story. So that's always cool. So now, first, Eric, what I would like for you to do is just tell me a little bit about your companies, the VIP Marketing, Craft Creative, 10 Mile Studios, and the AdCast. Tell us a little bit about that.
Thank you so much for that introduction, man. I really appreciate it. I think first and foremost, when anyone listens or hears that about the companies, the first thing they ask is, when do I sleep?
You're busy.
For me, you know, we do have these companies, and, you know, I started out in late 2009, 2010, and I found a need that wasn't being fulfilled. I wanted to be more of an advocate for clients. And so, you know, I started out, I left my job from a broadcast TV station and went out and just did, started my own agency. I started my own agency, hung my shingle. I started with a desk from Craigslist and a Toshiba laptop that I keep in my office as a reminder and a memento of how I started. And, you know, so I started the agency, you know, I didn't, you know, just kind of fell into it. You know, I fell into it and I started it because, you know, I had a manager that actually said to me, I don't know how to negotiate agency business.
Really?
They said, yeah. They said to me, I don't know how to negotiate agency business. And also, you know, would ridicule me for sending my emails out saying my spelling wasn't correct. My punctuation wasn't correct. And it was almost like, instead of coaching,
right,
it was more belittling.
Right.
So what I did was, you know, when I did decide to move out on my own, I wanted my agency to be what my employment was not.
Okay.
I wanted to have a great environment, a family environment where people can actually create, people can, you know, do the work because they want to, not because they have to.
Right.
And when I did that back in 2010, I mean, this was early on before social and all these other things got really popular.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time we were focusing on traditional media. And as I would go from business to business and speak to different business owners about letting us, you know, handle some of their marketing, what I found was there was a need for creative.
Okay.
There would be a lot of businesses that would actually have marketing people on the inside, and they didn't want to invite us in. It's almost like letting the wolf into the hen house.
Right.
And so what we did was I started Craft Creative, and Craft Creative was solely focused on just the creative idea and the video production. And with that, I mean, it had just such a great trajectory of growth. We made sure that it was 100% separate
from
VIP Marketing. It operated different colors, different branding, different trademarks, and everything. And so as that geared on and we started to develop and gain a lot of production business, here's the production agency growing.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the marketing agency thriving. The cool thing is anytime the marketing agency gets a client, it hires the production company.
Right. Okay.
And as it went on, what we found ourselves doing was we would always rent the studio space. And it was just almost cumbersome for us on the Craft Creative side to rent studios. And so what we did was we just kind of put out that search, and we started, as we grew on, I mean, we started growing out our building to the point where we couldn't have more than 10 people using one bathroom anymore. So it was time to go. and then we sought out, you know, partnered with 4S Capital and the folks, you know, who have built up the 10 Mile building that we're in now. And we started our first studio, which is probably one of the very, very few. There's probably like two or three, if any, that I even know of around here, as far as African-American owned studios. And so when we did the 10 Mile Studios, this is a creative complex is what we call it.
Okay.
Where people can come in if they are a creator and they want to come in and do photography, or if they're a cinematographer and they need the studio background, or if they launch a podcast, they can come and rent out this studio.
Okay.
So we operate under, you know, under 5,000 square feet, and it's it's been a dream. And, you know, for me, it's just good. And I operate my own podcast, as you mentioned it,
right?
The ad cast out of it. And you know, we've been blessed. But, you know, like I said, I couldn't do any of it unless I had a great team on all sides. I love these people. They're great. And they push me forward. And I thank them for it.
All right. Awesome. 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 So now you had a lot packed in there. So you also have a lot that you got to do, right? What kind of makes me wonder, right? Because you mentioned the fact that they kind of belittled you in the beginning, and you use that fuel to move forward. So now I like the fact that you said, well, you had the creative separate. How did you come to that? Was that something that just popped in your head? Because a lot of people, they start jumbling things up and they don't really kind of segment things. And I found it kind of thought provoking that you said that you had that plan. Did you come up with yourself? You mentioned mentors to me before. Was that something that you learned from somebody else? Where did that come from?
Actually, you know, it was from the experience actually going out into the marketplace. And what I did notice was a lot of agencies where they would have creative in-house. What they would do is they would put the agency first instead of making the creative just as important as the agency.
Okay.
Because the truth is, sometimes without the creative, an agency is nothing.
Right.
Because when a client hires you, they hire you for strategy, execution, and they want you to have great creative that can differentiate them from the rest of the people in the market and help them move forward. So the need was creative. You know, we felt like we had the strategy and the agency side down, but it was just that need for creative. We wanted something that was fully devoted just to handling creative and actually coming up with great ideas. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it propelled so fast.
Okay. So I did a little, you know, we talked, but I looked at a few different things and I saw you, I guess, teaching a class or talking. And one of the things that you talked about was the importance of telling a story and not just talking about numbers per se when your client goes in there. Where does that come from? That's kind of because I think the key to selling or convincing or making is a story kind of sticks with you.
Well, I think the one thing about, you know, when you talk about selling, people, they don't like to be sold, but they
exactly
love to be helped.
Right.
Know?
Okay.
And so I think with that was we try to look at things a lot different versus saying that we want to sell them something.
Right.
I come from the approach of, you know, I don't want to sell to sell. I want to sell to help, you know,
right.
We use that. And that's what's big for me. That's kind of a driver for me to say that I want to be able to help people.
Okay. Well, and you mentioned the word selling, and nobody wants to be sold anything. You're 100% right. Cause when we talk, and I run a car dealership. So, you know, the word selling is something I don't like to talk about. We just kind of leave people to make their own decision. And that's what we do. Now you mentioned it in that scenario, but you also mentioned it before when you were talking about what you didn't want to see, right? You know, you were ridiculed, you were this. So even when you started to think about your business and who you wanted, you went from what's in their mind. What does that person want to need? I thought that was pretty cool. Have you always had that insight? It's not about you. It's about them.
Yeah, I feel like I've always wanted to be an advocate for people. I think that's something that I was raised with, you know. I get satisfaction in knowing that you did something right. And I felt like in business, if you were doing the right thing, the money's going to come.
Okay.
And that's where the longevity would come from. And that's kind of my desire to be able to help people. And that's kind of why I do what I do.
Okay.
You know, people can say, you know, hey, I'm wrong. But a lot of times when I look at whatever problem that I'm solving, I don't think with money first.
Okay.
I think about this scenario, like how much could I help these people and what kind of situation they're in. Now, don't get me wrong. We're in a business and you will get rewarded for the problems you solve. But, you know, in my case, I got to a point where I couldn't solve small problems anymore. Mm-hmm. I had to start solving bigger problems because there was so much demand for time.
Okay. So what Outside of that, is there some other source for your passion? Because what I get when I listen to you and talk to you and we kind of get in long conversations, it's always about passion. And I've seen some things on YouTube and some other things, and you were very passionate one day about somebody told you they couldn't do this or whatever. So is that what fuels you in the beginning? Is that kind of still what fuels you now? What was that or what is that?
Well, you know, I got a switch turned on for me in September of 2004.
Okay.
In September of 2004, I remember this distinctly, and there's two managers that stood out for me. It's just like you can always go back and remember great teachers in your life. You can always go back and remember certain managers that should have been leaders. So I've always had the helping in me that I've wanted to do, but I think what sparked me more in the agency side was what I received from managers. And that started in September 4 when I interviewed for a radio position. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed with one group, and I was getting blown off and blown off because, you know, when I started out in a lot of broadcast media, radio and television, there weren't a lot of African Americans that actually did that. Mm-hmm. And when I interviewed, I originally interviewed with a general market station, which was, you know, like a non hip hop station, or you would, some people would call it an urban station.
Mm-hmm.
So I interviewed with like the country and the pop stations, and I probably did two or three different interviews. I did some callbacks. And when I finally interviewed with the manager, he took me in his office and he put some paper clips on the desk. And I'll never forget this. Mm-hmm. I say 16 paper clips, and he tells me to this day, he says 8. So he put the